podcast runs through it. Coming to you from Sound Color Studios in Livingston, Montana. I'm Nelson King, here with Dixie Hart, co-host. And we're going to be doing another one of our candidate interviews this afternoon. As you probably know, we're trying to do a series of them of all the major candidates running for state office, some for local office as well, and giving them an opportunity to talk at length about what they believe and the issues that are important to them, and giving the voter a chance to get to know some of these people before they vote for them in the primary. We're trying to emphasize the idea that this year, if being 2020, the election is really important. It's not just your average primary. It's important that we get good people. And this is part of the process, hopefully. So, Dixie, anything you want to say? I don't think there's any preposition for this one. The person we're going to interview today is Casey Schreiner.
Yeah, Casey Schreiner, and he's been in the Montana State Legislature as in the House for three terms, I believe.
At least three, since 2013.
So right.
2013.
Right. And he's ready to move into statewide office, running for governor.
So it's an interesting, it should be interesting, and hope you stick with us. Good afternoon and welcome. This is a podcast runs through it. Today we're interviewing Casey Schreiner, who's got a long history in the legislature since, 2013 actually you started, I believe. And we usually get going by introducing you and letting you say, how you got to be where you're at and how you got to be a legislator in the first place. And I've got questions that come after that, but that'll get us started.
So. Sounds great. Perfect. Well, yeah, I got elected in 2013. I actually just moved back to Great Falls. I'm born and raised in Great Falls, which has been a unique opportunity for me to experience what it's like to grow up in a community that's very collaborative but bipartisan in nature. I mean, for example, just as a guy who's been elected there for multiple times, the president won my legislative district by 14 points. There's a good chance that most of the people on the block I live voted for Donald Trump but also voted for me, because you come from a community that you have to have those conversations. But born and raised in Great Falls, I'm a graduate of Montana State University. I actually graduated in 2005 with a degree in cell biology and neuroscience, and then later went on to teach, which there's a whole backstory on why I decided to enter education. But I took advantage of the Northern Plains Transition to Teaching program and went back and got my master's in education, taught in Butte, actually at a private school, at Butte Central Catholic Schools, and then decided to, met my wife. She's a Butte girl. My mom's a Butte girl. We decided there's a large family. It might be time to move and get a little bit of space. So we moved back to my hometown of Great Falls, and where I took a job at Paris Alternative High School working with high-risk youth. And then because of budget cuts, after teaching in Great Falls for a couple of years, I actually lost my teaching job. I was the last science teacher hired. Great Falls did not pass a mill levy. That's a very tax-sensitive community. I think they passed one mill levy in 12 years. There's always education cuts happening there. But I got laid off with a wife that was 6 months pregnant in a high-risk pregnancy. And so that's just kind of informed why and how I have made my decisions in the legislature. I decided to run actually in 2012 after a trip to the Capitol with students. I was there just kind of serendipitously. A teacher called in sick. And so the principal came in and said, hey, I need somebody to chaperone our three students. And so I went down there, and the students had kind of a rough go. These are students in a high, like I said, at the alternative high school, high risk students who oftentimes are raising, they've made a decision to maybe climb back into school once dropped out. Many of them are raising their siblings. And it was a day that they were talking about some social programs and cutting some social programs, and the number of those students take advantage of, and they actually keep their family sustainable for them to get their education. Student turned to me and said, hey, Mr. Schreiner, tell me about your political beliefs. And I actually said, no. I was like, that's not, you're here to learn about the process. I actually was disappointed in the way the legislators that came up to talk to the students were very partisan in the way they talked. I think that the then Speaker Mike Milburn actually brought up the Republican Party's five-star platform to present to the students, which I was just appalled at the fact. I mean, to each their own, their political beliefs, but that wasn't the place or the time. And I guess something rang because the girl's name was Danny. And she said, you know, Mr. Schreiner, you should run for the legislature. And I had that. And I still get goosebumps to this day because it's just, it's changed the trajectory of my life. And that's how I got involved. I just, Anders Blewett, who was a senator out of Great Falls, who I just happened to grow up with, was walking by at almost that exact moment. And I flagged him down and said, hey, Anders, how hard is it to do this? And he said, hey, if you're interested in getting involved, we'll find a place for you. And the rest has kind of been history. I've been able to be elected multiple times. I just came out of the legislative session where I served as the Democratic leader in the House, which I in a session that honestly I think was the most successful legislative session for getting big priorities done for Democrats in my lifetime, given that we were in the minority specifically. So, you know, I think we accomplished those things because, you know, you have to, I enter this thing with pragmatic ideas, I think, and hold myself accountable to what I say all the time. And day one of the legislature, I stood up and actually said, here are the things that we're going to do. We're going to pass Medicaid expansion or protect Medicaid expansion. We're going to finally solve the problem with firefighters' health and safety. We're going to pass infrastructure. We were able to get all those things done because we said, we don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. If you actually want to accomplish something, we're going to build a table and we're going to let anybody come. And if you want to tear us down, we're just going to treat you as white noise. And for the most part, that was pretty successful.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a kind of history of, well, from your own district, which is kind of on the east, northeast side of the town, you actually only have a little bit of the town in your district. And then you actually have Air Force Base and then it's a mixed community. And I notice that most of your elections are won by 200-300 votes.
Yeah. Well, and so I won my last election by a little larger margin, but I also only have won previous elections by 42 votes. It is, like I said, it's a pretty purple, if you're talking colors, community that really requires you to have a conversation. I am kind of lucky enough to be the only representative. Obviously, there's a senator who also represents, but to represent an Air Force base and the unique challenges of one representing a group, that group of people, given that they have very unique needs and encounter unique things as far as their kids going to school and kind of what you deal with on related to how their kids react to, you know, them being shipped off and things like that. But then also you have folks who are old, yeah, folks from the Anaconda Copper Company days who still own their homes on the north side of Great Falls and trying to figure out what's best for that combined community of folks and getting opinions from all sides is just, I think, how I've been successful. But I also think that it's a skill that's needed in order to be competent and successful in the governor's seat.
Well, if you don't mind, I'm going to try to follow that thread through further questions because it seems to me we hear a lot of that. We've interviewed quite a few people. Mm-hmm. And one of the big strains, I guess you could say, in the thinking from a lot of them is we need to get along in some fashion with people on the other side of the aisle. And these days that's hard. I mean, that's not an easy, it's not like it used to be where you could have them out to lunch and you could actually talk business. That sort of thing is difficult now. But how do you do that? How do you approach that? You come from an area where it's at best purple. And you manage to survive it and do quite well. You come to a house which is not Democratic in any means and yet get things done. Mm-hmm. What is it about it that you're able to make that work? I mean, can you put your finger on that?
Well, I think it's part of the reason why I decided to run for governor in the first place is because you don't often have people who are regular, everyday Montanans in the position to make decisions. And at the end of the day, if you get regular Montanans at a table together, the partisanship goes out the window. And I'll tell you, we've seen that time and time again. I do think it's a benefit where I come from. I think the fact that North Central Montana, if you look at the folks who come together on both sides of the aisle and help craft these pieces of legislation, they come from a specific part of the Montana. And a lot of them come from the Golden Triangle. There's no doubt that Senator Tester comes from the same region of Montana, and he's able to be pretty successful at the federal level. So I think it's something that if you approach politics from the perspective that our end goal is to do right by the people who sent us there and understand that the second and the day you stop pushing those buttons, nobody cares anymore, and you're okay with that, then that means you're there for the right reasons. And if you're there for the right reasons, most of the time you kind of collate around other people that have those same values, even if your belief systems are different, and you're able to accomplish things down the road and have those candid conversations and figure out, you know, how can we accomplish something where not all sides are going to be happy, but we also understand that we've moved the ball down the field, to use a sports analogy. And that's the way I approach life. I think that's coming out of the classroom, understanding how you have to interact with different student types, different administrative types, other teachers that are, if you're in a middle school and you're on a teaching team. I think professionally, I was just prepared to be in a position to make sure that we always are getting. I'm just a get stuff mm-hmm. done kind of guy. That's my primary focus, is let's just get stuff done.
Well, let's say that we were down in a hole maybe 4 years ago where the animus in the legislature was government is bad. We don't want government to do anything ever, period. And I think that's improving now. But from your perspective, what's happened to make it possible for you to work with the Republicans and other people to get things done? Is it a sense that government can do some things and should, or?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's that some political winds change, to be honest with you. If you see what the Republican caucus brought this session, they brought the pay plan for state employees. They were bringing bills that Democrats have carried for session after session after session. But because now there's a political advantage to carrying those pieces of legislation, they're willing to carry them, which means that they're willing to pass. You know, one of the benefits about being in the legislature is, and being in the minority, not that there's a ton of benefits from being in the minority, but that every piece of legislation that you are successful with has to be bipartisan in nature. So you inherently learn how to have those conversations and get stuff done. Medicaid expansion, I think, was the best example of a piece where identifying everybody's role, but then everybody's stake in, skin in the game. For example, in rural Montana, I mean, this community, critical access hospitals were on the line. The idea that you would have a situation where, and I'll give you a personal example why this is actually really important to me. I've had at the age of 37 the opportunity to experience some pretty big life things, and a lot of people have. Every Montanan has a story, but you know, I think it's those stories that politicians, if we want to use that term, should be talking about that makes us relatable. You know, our last kid, Finn, was born. He's 2 years old now. 8 days after he was born, my wife had a hemorrhage. Very serious. If I didn't live 10 minutes from the emergency room at Benefice Healthcare, I'd be a single dad right now. Every time we talk about Medicaid expansion, I always would think, if I lived in a community who no longer was going to have a hospital there, I'd be a single dad. And that just is moving to me, to the point where we're willing to fight like hell and do whatever we can to protect those. And having that sort of conversation, you know, you talk to people, Republican, Democrat, everybody's got a family member who's come close. Mm-hmm. And those are the things that are on the line. If some of these pieces of legislation, you know, put the politics aside, they are real impacts on people's lives or the loss of life that happen if you don't do these. We got to be willing to talk about that. And I think that's one of the things reasons why I've been successful is that I've always said I'm an open book. If you're going to run for office in Montana, you should be willing to have a conversation about what's going on in your life, how you make your decisions. You know, if you're relatable and people understand and think that you got their back, they're going to vote for you. And that's kind of the tact we've taken in our governor's race. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's actually turn to the governor's race for a minute here. I'm going to ask you why you decided to run for governor, but I'm going to tip the can a little bit here. You're looking at Governor Bullock, who's been an administrator, in an administrative position most of the time, and when he was asked, do you want to run for senator, his response almost every time is, I don't want anything to do with the legislature. That's not something I'm good at. I don't know how to do that. I don't want to do that. You're trying to go the other way. You really have proven yourself very capable in the legislature. Now you want to be administrator. Why? What do you expect to get out of it?
Well, I think that we need administrators who are willing to have a conversation and sit down at the table with those people from around our state that are sent to Helena to help make decisions. I think that you have to have a state administrator who understands the decisions that are made in that office, even beyond the law, in executive orders and policies that the administration or the agencies have impact people's lives. You know, I decided to run for governor because when I say that Montana deserves a governor who knows what it's like to live like the rest of us, Montana deserves somebody who's at the very top of the Department of Labor, who's experienced job loss. You know, I said I was laid off, you know, from my teaching job, had to figure out what I was going to do. I went out and got a real estate license to try and, you know, slug along to make some money to pay my medical bills. Ended up getting a job with the Department of Labor because I thought, hey, what a great thing. I just came out of being unemployed. That's an experience that most people aren't going to have. You know, we have the experience of the day one of my son Aiden's life. We had an insurance snafu, wasn't covered by our insurance. $65,000 is what our medical bill was going to be for the first day of his life. That NICU kid was in there for 14 days. Now, mind you, that is way smaller than what a lot of families have to deal with. But at the end of the day, that $65,000 issue that we ended up getting resolved because he should have been covered, I will tell you, part of the reason it was resolved was because I was able to call and say, hey, this is an issue. And they knew that I was a state representative. It shouldn't be that way. You shouldn't have to be an elected official to get your bills at a medical facility resolved. These are all things that I think the governor should have to have experience in. You should have to understand what it's like to live paycheck to paycheck, or at least have experienced it in your life. You know, to be honest, I'm a special needs dad. Two of my three sons are on the autism spectrum. We have daily services, well, up until recently, because their services got cut, that have come into my home. So I understand what families go through when they have a loved one that they need to care for, and they need strangers to come into their home. And you have to accept those people into your life as part of your family, because you have to put a trust in them to actually do what's best. I don't think these are experiences that most people that run for governor have, but it should be. That's the reason why I go the other direction, because I think that there's things beyond what happens in the legislature that the agencies of the state of Montana can impact. Business successes. You know, I had the opportunity to be the director. So I have some executive. I was the executive director of the State Workforce Innovation Board a few years ago. Finding a way for our private businesses to, in a responsible way, build out a workforce. We have a huge impending workforce problem. I'm sure if you go around anywhere in Park County, you're going to find businesses that are struggling to find a workforce that, and it's, you can't just pull people off the street. Everybody thinks, well, there's these people that need jobs. Well, they need training. You have to have a skill set, and sometimes actually a degree or a credential, which is why one of the very first things we rolled out in our governor's campaign was free two-year college. Because at the end of the day, this whole idea that what a public education should be is K-12 is an idea from the 1800s. Why in a world where the high school degree is super important still, I mean, the former high school teacher in me still is holding on, but you need to do something post-secondary anymore to be successful. Kids graduating now, if they don't go military or they don't go out and get some sort of certification or credential, are really in a lurch. They need to find some way to do that. The system's always been built to get people to a place where they can be successful. I think that we just need to move the paradigm. It's the same reason why I was the carrier and a co-sponsor of all the pre-K legislation that went through last session. These are the things that I think the governor should be worried about, and they should have the experiences to back it up. And I think that we've, for better or worse, had a number of those experiences.
My understanding, I mean, the governor obviously plays cheerleader a lot, particularly for Democratic issues and things like that. So you have a representation thing you do, but does the governor also initiate legislation in any way, or?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's always an the governor is the person who builds the state budget, and tied to that budget always are policy and fiscal ideas that the governor's office is putting out. Now they obviously can't run those bills; they go out and find a legislator to put their name on it and carry it through the legislative process. But yeah, there's definitely before every session, the governor lists their priority bills. I do think that the next governor, I hope, is willing to, no matter who it is, and I approach this from somebody who just came out of the other side of the equation. Have a better partnership at times with the folks who are coming from communities and understanding the impacts of those communities and having a real dialogue about what those priority bills look like. I'm not saying that that's been a bad situation. I think it's a challenge for any governor. I think it's a benefit to have a governor who comes from outside of the state capital, who comes from one of our communities that's maybe a little more nuanced in its politics. I think that's a benefit. I do think that there is an inherent problem with always choosing to elect folks who haven't really had a chance to leave Helena city limits professionally in a while.
So as a governor, you're looking to both lead and initiate legislation, and to a certain extent anyway. Specifically, you mentioned healthcare, you've mentioned education. What are your priorities? I mean, for most of us, the big priorities are those two and climate change.
Yep.
And some other things too, but I mean, how do you look at your priorities from the position of being a governor, you know?
Yeah, so our priorities, and every time I give a talk, and I'm lucky enough to have a little get-together here in Livingston tonight, that I'll give the same spiel. I'd say four, but it ends up being five, is that the first thing we always want to say is our number one priorities are always going to be the things that allow people to get to a place to think about the bigger stuff. So kitchen table topics. The former teacher in me has this conversation about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, if people feel supported, they feel fed, and they feel like they're stable, they can think about larger scale things. So the first thing that I think we need to talk about is healthcare. I think that, you know, I unfortunately went through a situation about a year and a half ago where my dad passed away at the age of 60 years old. My dad died at 60 years old because of the cost of his medication. My dad was a type 2 diabetic. The cost of his insulin was absurd. And my dad, who was a nurse, would try to stretch that insulin so that he could keep food on the table and actually pay for stuff for, you know, his family. That's a gross choice Montana shouldn't have to make. And frankly, I think whoever's in the governor's seat should be a pretty active player, whether it be figuring out how to negotiate medical prices or pharmaceutical prices with the big state health insurance plan, or being willing to engage in federal lawsuits. I think we have to get out there and we have to say enough is enough, because people are actually dying, especially in a state that's aging. Two, obviously, education is a priority. It's a passion of mine, but not just because I'm a former teacher, mostly because I'm a dad. You know, I have a 6, a 4, and a 2-year-old son. And as I mentioned earlier, two of which are on the autism spectrum. We have to pass public pre-K in this state. I will tell you, it's not just because I'm a big fan of pre-K. It's because it's changed our lives. At the age of 3 years old, my son Aiden was nonverbal, didn't make any eye contact. You kind of had to physically manipulate Aiden to have communicate with him, which as a parent is devastating. You know, there was a point where we didn't know if Aiden would ever even be able to say, I love you, to Teresa and I. But because Great Falls, he won the lottery because he lives in a community that funds a public pre-K system. Aiden got, you know, daily services, but what most importantly, he was layered with being able to go to preschool every day. Aiden entered, so the last legislative session, after being nonverbal and all that stuff, the last legislative session, Aiden would read books to me over video chat every night before bed. He entered kindergarten without having to have special education interventions. That is crazy. That is life-changing, and the fact that we haven't been able to get that done makes zero sense to me. So it's changed our family's trajectory, so that's a big priority. I also, as you know, I talked about the free college. I think just in general, engaging in funding of our public education system has to be better, and it has to be more strategic. I do think it's interesting, you brought up climate change, and I'll talk about that in a second, that our, you know, we have been a net exporter of energy in the state for a while. There's some conversation that might change once Colstrip goes away. We may, unless we can figure out some innovative ways to continue that size of generation. But I'll tell you, it's our university system who should be engaged in that. We should be funding R&D for clean energy in our university system. I don't know why we're not doing that. You know, other states have gone down this road and been very successful in getting stuff done. That's the priority that we're going to put out there as well. So education, big deal. Obviously, workforce, as that's kind of my ballywig. We have to find out a way to make sure that businesses have enough employees, because unfortunately, you know, we do still maintain an economy where if they don't find good employees, they shut down, and then we don't have jobs in our communities. I actually don't fall under the assumption that whenever people that run for office get out and say, I'm a job creator. No, you're not. Government sets the table and makes sure that it's a fair playing field and people innovate. And that's, you know, they're who creates that. There are times we do.
Well, you want jobs on one hand and put the right people in the jobs.
Yeah, and you want good wages. Yeah. I mean, I fundamentally think we got to do better. You know, I know in 2016, the candidates were arguing over whether we were 49th in the country or we were 35th in the country in wages. And I always laughed at that because I was like, well, we should be better than both of those. Neither one of those are great. So, I mean, that's a big issue. But then to speak to the climate change piece, we have to be leaders on this. With a $7 billion outdoor rec, just outside of the fact that it's just what's morally right for the world, our economy is based on having a clean and healthy environment. Our Constitution right. requires it. And frankly, I think we can do better. We've made a commitment that, I hate putting dates on stuff, but right out the gate, we're going to put together a climate cabinet that isn't just going to be agency heads. We're actually going to try and get professors and even folks maybe from outside of Montana who are experts on the topic. You know, I know that there's groups that exist right now. My understanding is they're out there. They're going to give out policy statements. We need people doing more than policy statements. We need some actual policies with some teeth behind them right. to come out of a group of experts. I don't think the governor should be an expert on everything, or should they never are. but they shouldn't think they are. The way I've been, I think, the most successful in my life is I've always found a way to be able to surround myself with the most competent professional people possible. And that's a big priority of me running for governor. You asked about moving into the administrative field. That's what I think has to happen. I think we have very good state employees. I've had the opportunity to be one. My wife's had the opportunity to be one. I think that we need competent, very talented leadership at the top at all levels. And that's going to be a big priority because it should be for the governor. So that was a long answer to your question.
Yeah, but that, yeah, I mean, when you go through the list of priorities, you can probably talk all day on it if you need to. But yeah, the important thing is we want people to understand that you do have a picture of what things are important and why and when you want to emphasize them and that sort of thing. I know you've also worked on, let's see, the firefighter issue. And well, the reason I'm talking about that is because that's a concrete, very concrete thing, particularly for this state.
Yeah.
And I assume by firefighter, you also mean forest fire. Pardon me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So first, so basically, and I got the opportunity to listen to the episode, the first episode with Lori Bishop, where she talked a little about this. But yeah, I have been fortunate enough to be able to participate in a pretty high level with the firefighter health and safety legislation. You know, we were one of the last states to not have our firefighters protected. So if you got cancer, which all studies show you can get cancer from having that job, just all the particulars that you inhale, it's not even that you inhale, it's they absorb through your skin over time and then they settle in different parts of the body. And there's so much data out there that shows this happens. I was able to be one of the folks that was able to help push to get that through after 18 years. I actually was even got an award from our state firefighter federation in 2017 for my championing of that issue. We hadn't got it done, and in my speech there, I said this is a great plaque, but you know it's kind of bittersweet because we're not done, and we're not going to spike the football until we know we got it, and we actually got it this session. So, but yeah, those are concrete things. You know, I think that this community deals with, and a lot of communities, the governor's office needs to have a real conversation about how we're funding our local communities. The system wasn't built for the population influx that we have now. Right. I think that we definitely need to have a better partnership with our local communities. There's a big conversation within legislators around the state right now about what taxes look like. I'll tell you that there's no way you can have a conversation about taxes with you know political parties involved that doesn't become partisan in nature. People are trying very hard, but at the end of the day, Montana's demand that certain services exist either at the state level or the local level, and frankly the federal level, and the system as it exists right now is not built to accomplish everything that the public wants. So we have to figure out a plan for what that looks like, and I think that is by bringing together local officials with the governor's office to help build out what that should look like, what the give and take of our state to local taxes looks like, and how we give back. I know this happened years ago. There's a lot of positives and negatives that happened with the big bill, but there's stuff that has to happen now, or you're going to see communities have to start shutting down a ton of services. I mean, we see it in our community. Great Falls is not a small community. You hear constantly the different things that people have. We lost our local pool recently that has been relied on by specifically folks in the low-income community for a long time. You're going to see stuff like that continue to happen unless we have a governor who's willing to have a real conversation, not from the top down, but in partnership with your local electeds, and understand that we all have to play a real part in building this table and making sure everybody's voice is heard.
Yeah, the communities are different. Here we lost a lot of health care, and particularly mental health facility, and that really hurt the community.
Yeah.
And but the governor probably sits in the best position. My understanding would be that in budgetary issues, where you're trying to, we were down in the hole, I would put it that way, where no money for anything, period. Anything that had to do with government, no money, done. But that's changing now because people, as you say, people want services.
Mm-hmm.
And many of these services cannot be provided by private. They have to, at best, they could be coordinated if they come from private sources. But the government still has to be involved. So you're trying to be governor at a time when there's a rebalancing. Is that maybe the right word? Between taxes, services, and the role of government, even at the state level.
Yeah, I mean, and community mental health is a huge issue. So, for example, in 2017... 2015, I apologize. 2015, I had the opportunity to be one of the lead Democrats on negotiating community mental health services increases for the state and into the budget. We ended up with $20 million in increased funding for community services. 2017, and I would say that a number of parties own this, but a lot of that stuff got cut. So we built out a system. Communities were super excited for what the opportunities their community would have to serve the people locally in a mental health way that lets them stay at home, and then it went away. And so now you have to rebuild that. You have nonprofits that shut down because the funding stream got cut. And what do? They can't sit around and wait for the funding to be reinitiated. And there is a huge role for the nonprofit sector to play in a number of these areas. I'll tell you, corrections is a great example of a place like this. You know, we did some really good work in justice reinvestment in the state of Montana. I will say there's a lot of pushback that happens at time from professionals, judges, prosecutors, parole folks, and some of that's definitely sound complaints, because what we didn't do is we didn't invest in community correction services. All the data shows out there, if you put a significant investment in community corrections and reentry services along with the justice reinvestments that allow people to, if they get into trouble, be able to serve but also get a training or a skill or maintain employment during wise, recidivism goes down. You don't have to worry as much. You don't create higher level offenders by putting them in a secure facility when they don't have to be. We didn't do some of that stuff. We have made the decision to reinvest in a private for-profit prison, which I was bold enough to be the one legislator since I've been there to try and make that illegal in Montana for those things to exist. I just fundamentally think that having a profit motive on human interaction can be, whether it be in human services or corrections, when you make more money the longer somebody's either getting a service or the longer somebody's incarcerated, creates a real conflict of interest. But unfortunately, we went down a different path. Those are things that I, as governor, would like to see change as well. But that takes more than a governor's pen. That takes legislators mm-hmm. willing to right. take on that fight
attitude
as well.
Change too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, any other issues that we haven't touched on that you'd like to bring up or, again, from the perspective of becoming a governor and things that you'd like to address?
Yeah, I think we need to continue to fight the money in politics. I'll tell you, even as a guy running, I'd love to write a book after this as a regular human being that ran for governor to see the gross money that's involved in this game at this point. You know, you have, you know, one candidate on the other side of the aisle for me that has raised $1 million within the first 6 months he's been in. Now, is that money that was put out that now is coming back? Who knows? I mean, the thing that we can't have happen is try to fight money with money. I think that that's going to set a terrible precedent if we decide what we're going to do is just go out and the richest person is now going to be the candidate on each side.
Yeah,
I have a real fear that's what we're leaning towards.
It seems like
And it should still be about going out and talking to people. At the end of the day, we have built a system where if you want to be involved in government, you have to either be independently wealthy, you have to be retired, or you have to be lucky enough to have a contract situation with your employer that allows you to go serve. That limits a lot of Montanans out of from being able to be involved. And then on top of it, you're going to tell people that you got to go out and raise $50,000 from your friends and family when another person is just going to come in and just slap a check down themselves, or an outside group's going to come in and raise them. Right. We need to figure something out. And I think that the current administration has done a very good job of tackling money in politics. I don't think we're done. I think the next governor needs to definitely attack that, because frankly, all the issues that we've been talking about are issues that would solve. By going out, making sure that the people that are walking the halls and being paid to be there have, you know, less power than what they maybe have right now. The only other thing is the land board. I think it's pivotal. I think the other reason why I'm running for this is we got to have an everyday regular Montanan
Absolutely.
Sitting in the governor's seat who understands the value of those public lands. I will tell you, we're lucky enough. I'm lucky enough to have a state park in my legislative district. We have a Giant Springs State Park that's a little more urban of a state park. You know, it's more of like a city park with the river and stuff. But my family takes advantage of that almost every single Sunday. We walk down to our local coffee shop and we get coffees and walk back. I live like 2 blocks away from a coffee shop. Walk back, hop in the van and take the stroller down and we just hang out in Giant Springs. So, you know, I grew up hunting and fishing. I think that is our outdoor heritage is something we can't give up. And the concept that some of that stuff would go away or be sold to the highest bidder without the people of Montana being able to recoup or be able to continue to experience that stuff is, it would be devastating to our state. You know, I want Aiden, Liam, and Finn to be able to have the same experiences that I have. I'm excited. You know, I have not had the opportunity. Well, I've had the opportunity. That's not the right way to put it. My dad was my hunting buddy and my fishing buddy when I was younger. And when my dad got sick, that kind of is when we stopped going. And I'm excited for my kids to be older to where we can take in those experiences together that I got to have with my dad. And so the idea that that stuff could go away, and frankly, this is not hyperbole, but we are one election away from that happening. If the wrong person gets elected governor this cycle, all the work that was done on Medicaid expansion or protecting healthcare for 1 in 10 Montanans and keeping critical access hospitals goes away. All the work that was done for firefighter health and safety will go away. The work that's been done to make sure that women's reproductive rights are protected and access to their, you know, healthcare providers is upheld as a right goes away. This is a pivotal election for the state of Montana. This race specifically, there's a lot of big stuff going on, but this race is a game changer. If you end up with a one party, and I think we're going to work like heck, you know, as the current Democratic leader in the legislature, I still have a responsibility to making sure that more Democrats fill that chamber as well. It's part of the role you take on when you become the leader. But taking over one of those houses is it's not impossible, but it's challenging. So if you end up, if it's not able to happen and you end up with a one party government, it'll be very hard for us to recover as a state from that. And I think you will see economic impacts that happened. You're going to see people personally have huge impacts, especially folks that, you know, have special needs, folks that are on any sort of social service opportunity. And that's why I ran. Because there's so much on the line, and frankly, I can't figure out another person that's going to be a better advocate and frankly fighter for these topics and these people than somebody who's living it every day. And that's, like I said, for better or worse, our family is living this every single day.
Now, you follow in the shoes of, I guess, minor miracles of Democrats in very high positions in Montana government against the background of mostly Republican positions. And whether it's secret magic or some kind of charisma or whatever, you know, people like Bullock and Tester and others have managed to survive. In fact, do fairly well. It's not easy, but in what ways do you see yourself either following their tradition or, I mean, what is it that you would do? Obviously, you need some support from Republican voters, or independents at least. On the other hand, you don't want to completely abandon, obviously, your Democratic base support. How do you see negotiating that? How do you differentiate yourself at all, if you do, from Bullock? Or,
well, and I don't know if I mean, my background's quite a bit different. You know, I'm not an Ivy League educator. I graduated from Montana State University, right? I'm a classroom teacher. I mean, I think there's a conversation to be had about people still want themselves to they want to be represented by somebody who looks and has experienced what they experience every day. I think that is a huge differentiator in this race. If I'm talking just candidly about anybody else running for this race, there is not another person that I think can say, oh, I'm just a regular everyday Montanan. You know, Teresa and myself still have $40,000 in student loan debt from our college experience. Teresa and myself still live paycheck to paycheck when our bills come due. We still have to make payments on our medical bills for our kids' autism services. Those are big differentiators, and I'm willing to go out and talk about it. I think shoe leather is what's going to win this race, no matter how much money people pour in. But money is an issue. I mean, frankly, that's something that we're going to battle, and we're never going to be able to raise as much as any other candidate. You know, and I'm lucky enough to say that other people running are friends of mine. But some of my friends have a fundraising list probably from the governor right now. Some of my friends have national groups and huge or have big fundraisers and out of state. That's not something we're going to do. One, I'm not leaving the state for long periods of time. I got 3 toddlers at home. This hard enough being on the road. And I think that's how we differentiate ourselves, is having a conversation about real issues. And frankly, that's how you get those folks in the middle to vote for you. You know, everybody cares about their healthcare. Everybody cares about education. You know, I had a great conversation with, and I won't say who they are for their own sake, but elected Republican officials who were kind of shocked at the way the last election went and it related to the superintendent's race, because they said, the thing is like, we'll win all these other races, but you guys will win the superintendent's office. And unfortunately, that didn't happen. But their reasoning was because people trust Democrats with education. People trust Democrats in some areas, even if they don't want to publicly talk about it, they do Because we are out talking about what most common sense ideas. Common sense, of course we want an educated population. Like the concept that we wouldn't is ridiculous. That's how societies have always moved forward and cultures have evolved over time. So I think that these are the conversations to have. Also, I think there's a fact that like people want to elect somebody they'd have a beer with. And so anybody that wants to have a beer, just give me a call.
Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, you even have a brand you might have in mind. So, yeah. Coming from Great Falls. But, yeah, so I understand that it's always a tough road in this state. Running for a statewide office, you have to get name recognition. You have to get issue recognition. You have to kind of find a way where you can talk to the independents, pull in some people that you wouldn't normally get. They'll say, to put it, I don't know if you call it a coalition, but Bullock and Tester have been very successful in getting those marginal people put together so that they win. Not by a landslide, but they win, which is a big accomplishment. So I think you feel like that you're capable. You're in a position to do that, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you, the other strategic factor that goes into this is what we've seen over the last few elections is the increased need for us to do well as far as countywide in Yellowstone County and Cascade County. I think there's a very strategic advantage of me being born and raised in a community we've had a tough time winning in Cascade County. Tester's been successful, but Tester's sort of a proxy hometown. He's been adopted by the Great Falls community. He's a hometown guy coming from just up the road. I think that there's a big piece to, I think that it will be to not to our benefit for us to send somebody into the general election, unfortunately, given the way the world is right now, who comes out of the state capitol and has been there for quite a while, or comes from D.C. and has been there a while. I think that that will send the wrong message to the independent voters who still want to feel like, you know, government's going to work for them and not have a bigger role as far as dictating what they do in their lives. Now, I'm a firm believer that good government's good government, and I think there's a great big place for it. But there, as we know, government's not a popular conversation. You know, government, public employees are not always seen in the same light. Teachers, I think I heard at one point, there's a different acknowledgement that teachers don't have the same level of stature in communities that they have. Now, I will say, I've recently seen a study in my community that showed people still do care about their teachers. If you really press them on it, they do still respect and have that level of understanding that these are the folks who are helping build our communities. And I just think that there's something to be said for taking that experience and putting a teacher, not to mention it's a third of our state budget is education, finally putting a teacher in the governor's office.
Well, and I think it's interesting too, as a Democrat, that you really need to focus on Yellowstone County and Cascade County. So are you planning on spending a lot of time in eastern Montana too?
So it's like, thanks. It's like I threw that one as a softball. I actually started my campaign in eastern Montana. Obviously, we did an announcement video and I did a thing in Great Falls because it's where I live. But then we hit the road and we hit the High Line over, and our very first stops were in Sydney and Miles City, and we've been back there a few times since then. I think it is important, and back through Billings. We've been to Billings a number of times. Yeah, we have to spend a lot of time with the folks in Yellowstone County and eastern Montana, because you cannot win the general election. And that's the most important piece about that. And it's one thing to win a primary. Unfortunately, ideology ends up being a bigger deal, I think, in primary elections. And I think both parties experience this.
Right.
I think it's unfortunately the reason why I think that the Republican primary won't be close. I think that Congressman Jean Forte wins very soundly.
Yeah, and he's got some pretty heavy hitting campaigners that he'll be bringing into the state.
Oh, I know. Like if that should disqualify. I mean, that should just disqualify the guy right now. The fact, not to mention, like 2 days ago, we voted against the resolution denouncing the Russian.
Yes.
Engagement. Like he voted against that. Like how is this guy think he should be governor of the state? I don't know. But yeah, so eastern Montana, we have to put a lot of time and effort. And I'll tell you, the people in eastern Montana are politically active, they're politically engaged, and they're politically astute. And if you ignore them, they know that that's happening.
At your peril.
I think we just have to be better about getting out there and having those conversations and not spend so much time in Missoula. I mean, obviously Missoula is super important. It's a big population base, but not at the peril of other communities.
We've been kind of touching on the fact that, yes, you're running for governor of the state. and this state has issues of its own and so forth. But you live in a country that has its own issues, and the governor is one of many people that are dealing with that as well as the local state issues. So without diving deep into the, you know, the ideology and the but you, what's your basic take on where we're at with, well, a couple things, but the, at the national level, we are involved in an impeachment process, and it's clearly more than just a partisan issue.
Yeah.
I know it's hard to argue that, but that's basically, so let's start with simple. We have a question we ask because we want people to recognize that they need to think about this, regardless of where they fall. Do you believe it's appropriate for the President of the United States to ask a foreign leader to investigate a political rival?
No. No, I mean that goes against the very foundation of you know. Here's what I think's crazy about that happening is, or that it did happen, is the fact that there was all this conversation about immigration, about how countries should have borders, representation, and well, you just crossed a border in a heinous way to try and get a foreign government to come and impact an American citizen's life. That's gross and wrong. And I think that what we're in right now is a very unique time in history where we're either going to see a rebalancing of what the Constitution was written for, or we're going to see things go farther over a cliff.
Exactly.
And I'm nervous. I'm scared. I think that as states, it's even makes it more pivotal, not to turn this back to the governor's race, but even more pivotal that we make sure that our elected leaders at the state level are competent, sound, and understand states' rights and where we need to fall in this conversation. Because the feds aren't, I will say, not to sound like somebody, you know, that always goes after the federal government, but I will tell you in this case, there's a bunch of places that I think the Montana governor needs to play a role. Student loan assistance. For example, we will engage, if I am governor, we are going to engage in the lawsuit as a state on behalf of all of our state and public employees, or not even state employees, city employees, for the loan forgiveness program that basically the federal government lied to people about. There are people that made life decisions, decided to make it sometimes much less money to give back to their communities with the understanding, I'm going to get a little benefit on the back end from having my loans forgiven, and then that's been pulled out from under them. They should be able to sue because of that. I
right.
think the state of Montana and the governor's office should be engaged in that conversation. I think there's a number of places that the governor can play a role with their legal counsel, and hopefully we'll have a good partner in the attorney general's office. I have a lot of faith that we will win that seat back as well, that's willing to go and tag team in some of these issues to make sure that Montana's rights are upheld, but that we are actually going to uphold the U.S. Constitution as well and say, you know, even if you guys aren't going to do your job, we're going to continue to push the envelope and push back at you because that document was written for a reason.
We can and we should.
We can and we should. Yeah. That's exactly right.
That's great.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time for coming around. I know everybody has a busy schedule, but we appreciate it.
No, it was a lovely drive. I'm excited to do it. I wish I could have got in earlier. So thanks for having me.
Okay. Thank you. Well, that wraps up a very interesting interview. I think Casey seems to be the kind of person who can personalize things without sounding inauthentic about it. You know, he knows what he's talking about. He's been there.
Definitely, and he's got, you know, the experiences that the average Montanan can relate to, health care issues, you know, issues with his children's health. And so I think he's very relatable in that sense.
Yeah, and also, for me, what struck me is I remember he's been in the legislature for a long time, and you don't get to be minority leader unless you have skills.
Right.
And get things done.
Yeah, and you can see that, his willingness to compromise, to cooperate with his opponents in order to get things done, and you can tell from his personality that he's well suited for that, and it comes across as very authentic. And
yeah, and then finally, among many of most of the candidates we've talked to, I think he's the one who is trying or does bring home the message that this election, the 2020 cycle, primaries and general, are extremely pivotal,
or crucial or catastrophic or whatever word you want to use. No fooling. I mean, we hear this kind of rhetoric all the time, but this is a important election, period.
I'm glad that he brought that up, and I really would like to see a lot more candidates bringing that to people's attention, that this is a pivotal election. The direction the state's going to go in, as well as the country, is going to be decided in a very big way in 2020. And everyone should hopefully want to be a part of that decision-making process by getting out there and voting and participating.
If not now, when? You know, I'm thinking this is the time to be engaged. So anyway, with that said, for Dixie and I, Nelson King, thank you very much for listening to A Podcast Runs Through It. And that ends our session for today.